Good morning and welcome to the Daily Recollection. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
If we accept karma as the universal creative cause, does that mean we are simply cogs in a karmic wheel doomed to repeat the past? Is there no freedom of choice? Do we have to conclude that life is a checkerboard of nights and days, where destiny with people as pieces plays, hither and thither moves and mates and slays, and one by one back in the closet lays? Well, not according to Buddhist philosophy. Karma is not something pessimistic. If you think of karma as something wrong, you're seeing karma only according to what happened in the past. You look at the past and karma becomes a monster. So you should also look at karma in the present and future. Then karma becomes something very wide and really alive. Through karma, you can understand what your destiny is. Destiny itself has no solid form. It's something you can create. You can create your life. That is why we study karma. Dane and Katagiri. Accepting the principle of karma is not buying into fatalism. On the contrary, acceptance of karma as an operating power gives us a taste of the vast and mysterious forces at play in our lives. In fact, an awareness of karma can dissolve the illusion of being a small, separate self striving for a personal agenda in an unpredictable universe. The Bodhi bead locates us squarely within the family of things while restoring a sense of our role as co-creators of a cosmic narrative. Here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Try that again. First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, Sherry. This is David in New Mexico.
Hey, David.
First of all, let me say I just think it's brilliant that a subject like karma, which is, my experience, such a serious one for people on a path of purification, that we're asked to play with it as a game. It's just really
as co-creators,
yes,
right,
yes,
David?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's
mm-hmm.
just it's brilliant. I've really multiple things have resonated with this, but I guess the most significant one thus far has been the idea that it's really not all about me, which is something I've been working with since earlier this year. And then how the role of karma kind of comes into that. And so I haven't sorted this through, and I would love your input, but it seems to me that I am not responsible for the karma that I'm born with or for much of the karma that I have. It's just like my hair color and how tall I am and, you know, physical features like that.
Exactly.
But what I am responsible for are my actions and what I choose to do with the karma that I've been given. And I was been pondering this today, and then I think the section that Ashwini just read, at least to me, really speaks to that, and at least for me, reinforce that notion. So I would love to hear your insight.
Yes. Well, and what I say won't surprise you, David. It's why self-hatred has to stop before real spiritual transformation can take place. And, of course, people mired in self-hatred will just simply hear that through the lens. Hear through the lens? Well, you know what I mean. hear it through self-hatred. But what we're really saying is exactly what you laid out. What happened before, we can't do anything about that. We can't even do anything about what happened when we were in our teens or 20s or 30s or whatever, however many decades a person has. It's gone. It's over. It's done. What we can do is affect right now with the choices that we make. And without self-hatred, we're going to make, dare we say, good choices for ourselves and everyone else to the best of our ability right now.
I really think that emphasis on right now is really important, and I guess I'd like to ask for a further clarification. In the reading that Ashwini did a few minutes ago, it talked about karma, that we can affect karma, I think was the word, now and in the future.
Yes.
But it's,
okay. Oh, go ahead. Finish the thought.
Well, just it seems like I need to address karma right now. Impression is that the future is the realm of ego, and I just need to stay here right now and worry about
Now. And I suspect what's being pointed at is, so you have a family. Is that true? You live with family.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you have relationships with these people. And most relationships with people are karmic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you come along and you realize, you know, I'm going to work on being different in my relationship, say with your life partner, right? And you're going to, whatever it is that you realize is not contributing to harmony in your life or anyone else's, you're really going to work on that. You're going to bring all the conscious, compassionate awareness that you can to that relationship and those behaviors that you've been perhaps unconscious about. You're going to really focus on making that different. And now, this is no guarantee about anybody else, but how you are in that relationship is going to affect that relationship. And so I talk about it as going all Gandhi on somebody, right? So whatever the other person does, your commitment is to unconditional love and acceptance, let's say, and for you and for the other person. And that's what you're working on all the time. And that's going to affect that relationship. And as long as the two of you are in relationship, what the future is going to be affected by that work that you're doing right now in this moment.
Yes, I see that, definitely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah. So if we bring the same attempt to be in conscious, compassionate awareness tomorrow and next week and next month and next year, then we can see how we're affecting the future. Now, what the future is going to be now when we get there, it's going to be a very different now from the now that it would have been had we not been making an effort at transformation.
So we're setting an intention now that will resonate both
not just an intention, right? So,
okay.
You know, I get stressed and I snap at people. Okay, there's my challenge, right? And as I let go of the stress, I stop snapping at people. I'm happier. I'm more cheerful. It's a very active. Yes, we could say it's an intention, but it's a very active, focused, kind of like going to the gym, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
So you're moving it from an intention to an action? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I'm really working at this. There's nothing, intention to me, I mean, maybe you don't see it that way, but intention to me can have a passive feel to it. You know, well, you know, I really intend it, but in this moment I'm busy and thinking about it. This has to be what we bring into the moment with all of our energy. And the thing about it, once we begin applying this for ourselves, we can see how when people talk, like Katagiri Roshi especially, talk about changing the world, that's what he's talking about. Each one of us cleaning up whatever we've got going on, coming from unconditional love and acceptance, has a profound effect on the world.
So be the change we want to see in the world.
Exactly. Well stated. That's it. That's it. And if we're not, then we can quit worrying about the world. We know why it's the way it is, because I'm making it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And I don't know about you, David, but to me, it's very exciting. It's energizing. You know, that feeling that I don't have to just feel like a victim to my own way of being. You know, I'm the active ingredient here, and I can just kind of take hold of myself and have the life that I choose. And if it's a life that is not selfish, if it's a us kind of life, then it'll have profound results that we'll be able to see.
I don't want to overstep my time, but that one other thing I've seen this week that addresses that is when I made my karma cards, I focused on the negative at first. The next day I created some that were positive. But what I was able to see is, well, these positive ones at one time in life, I really looked at these as negative. These were problems for me, and they're not anymore. Now they're good things in my life. And so I'm curious if, you know, all suffering karma really is a good thing in the end, depending upon, well, where I sit, which is probably if I'm looking from conditioned mind or from awareness practitioner.
That's exactly it. And all of the problems that exist in the world are problems of ego, which is why we're working hard to transcend egocentricity.
Got it. Well, thank you, Sherry.
Well, thank you, sir. Go happy.
All right. Go happy.
All right.
Thanks, David. And Sherry, there were so many things about that conversation, but two things that the line that really, really jumped out at me is what you just said. We are the active ingredient. We don't have to be victims to the way we are.
Exactly.
That's just lovely, and that is energizing, and that is the creative power of karma, right? And
yes.
The thing that also struck me that you clarified is the distinction between future and consequences, right? Because that, I think, is an interesting distinction, because future is how ego thinks about what's going to happen, but consequences are there will be a change to whatever action I take. It doesn't define the outcome necessarily, or the future in the abstraction that the way ego does, but it acknowledges that any action will have repercussions.
Yes, exactly.
We don't know what they are in totality, but we
nope.
can know that they will happen, and that's not living in the future of ego.
That's right. And to me, the secret to the whole thing, so, for example, I'm going to stop cussing. Okay, I get it. It's an unpleasant, who needs it, right? I'm going to do it. Now, I can either do that from self-discipline that lacks compassion. I'm just going to grab myself and make myself be the way I should be. Or I'm going to take it on as, okay, today I'm going to see how few times I can cuss and which words I choose when I do. At the end of the day, IRL about it, right? I talk to the mentor about it. And the next day I do this, okay? And it's interesting and it's fun and it's something I'm doing with myself that I feel good about, that I want to do, that's energizing, okay? And without self-hatred, without comparison and judgment, we can take on anything like that and make it a pleasure, and we are transformed, as you say, whatever the end result is, if there were any such thing as an end result, which I suspect there isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. It's Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. I'm a complete basket case. I knew you. I was going to be unmuted because I'm crying. if I was cool, calm, and collected, no. But, you know. So what I'm struggling with is, how do I love and support the human while I tackle karma, or whatever it is I do with karma? Look at it, you know. I I think the first, it feels like the first layer I get to is all the suffering. So I look at karma as something I want to drop. I know, you know, there's an aspect of karma, there's a karmic behavior I want to drop. I can't drop it for the life of me. And I get stuck in that suffering. And
So Catherine, I think so a couple of things, right? We ask how we can be with the human incarnation as they go through a life of karma. We don't need an answer. We do know how, right? I mean, if you read the last page of the key, the question is, how did you know how to walk? How did you know how to do whatever you knew how to do? You just did, right? We don't have to ask how. If we are the love that we are here to transcend karma, then you know how to do it. And this practice has given you every tool that you ever will need. Coming to our next, you know, willingness is the name of the key. So yes, you can recognize that there is the self-hate that arises or the despair that arises or the suffering that arises when you look at the karma. That's the right hand. Your next step is a movement that you know. Pick up, go to the left hand.
It can be less pain, so it can be less painful, maybe.
Going back to what we talked about in recently as a quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj, right? Love is not afraid of pain. Love wants growth. So it won't shirk whatever is involved in the process of liberating you. We're not here to avoid anything. We're here to face it. And as long as what Sherry just said is true for us, I'm not going to self-hate. I am going to conscious, compassionate awareness. Then it can be a loving process. Might not be a painless process, but it's, not a suffering process, but it can certainly be a loving one.
Okay. Okay.
Because we can't get drawn into the story of the karma and it's how terrible it is and how terrible I am and how it's never going to change and I can't drop it, and we can just wave our fists at being victims of an unkind and hostile universe that is forcing me through a curriculum of a crucifixion in order to liberate me. What kind of a design is this? Right?
That's exactly what I feel. Exactly.
Exactly.
You just put the words exactly how I feel.
Yes. And so then we go, okay, see that? Accept that's how it is. Born of karma, heir to karma, abide in karma, supported by karma. What does practice tell me as the next step? Move the recorder to the left hand. Listen. And see what wisdom, love, and compassion has to say. And then listen again.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
That's, excuse me, such a great point. The confusion between pain and suffering. The process... It can be painful and loving, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
suffering is when we fall into ego telling us it shouldn't be happening, that it's
not the way it is.
Wrong. Yeah, and I just pictured in that conversation the possibility of just turning around to whatever, the moment, and saying to the universe at large, you must be really crazy about me. Because you're not going to let me get away with anything, are you? I mean, I'm going to have to give it all up before you're finished with me, and then we can realize there's the possibility of realizing how truly loved we are.
Yes, and Jerry, that place of it, we can have whatever experience we're having, right?
There's nothing wrong with any of it.
Yes, waving the fist is part of the process of surrendering to letting that energy go so I can kneel in prayer, right? That I can surrender.
Yeah, because as long as there's a me wanting something different from what is, there's going to be suffering. That's just it. And there's no hurry. It's fine. Mm-hmm. We got to go through every single second of it until we have the clarity that we need so that we don't get fooled anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna in Oberlin.
Hey, Anna.
Hey.
What are you seeing?
Well, I got a chance to spend some time this weekend with some dear friends who are usually in a part of the world where it's very, very clear that life could be over any second. And there was something about being with them and being in their presence where it's so clear that for them nothing is casual. And they're so aware that life could end any second that it just revealed a lot of karma for me about, you know, controlling and what I think I need to be okay, and just gave me such a sense of resolve, clarity, like that.
Yes. So I'm going to project, since I know a little bit about your life, that these are people who live where bombs are falling
exactly.
with some regularity, right? Missiles are coming and they're aimed at them. And so there isn't, and again, Anna, this is one of those places where we got to have this conversation without self-hatred, right? Because otherwise, ego just turns it against a person. But in that, there I am living in that place, and literally in any second, my whole world is blown up, me along with it. I have no. I'm just not going to worry about the kinds of things that we are able to think about and worry about when we're going to live forever.
Yes.
Yeah? It all becomes very clear. And the way it becomes very clear is people you know got bombed. They were there yesterday and they're not there today. The place where you went yesterday is now a pile of rubble. And so there's no longer a mystery about the realities of life. And so many of us, especially in a country like this, are privileged to live in a delusion that my biggest problems are with a coworker, or the fact that I might not be able to get time off for the vacation that I...
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and
no
truly
self-hatred,
the world.
No.
And it, because in fact, there's the clarity about that too. That's a moment spent away from love, right?
Yes.
And the word bodhisattva occurred to me. That they are bodhisattvas. They're being awake, and then you know, that was the experience of being with them, waking up. You know.
Yes. Of an expanded reality or expanded awareness, right?
Yeah.
That it does kind of, and you know, we know this, right? We know this because we've lost people. People have died.
Yeah.
People are suddenly sick. People, all kinds of things happen to people. All kinds of really difficult, painful things happen to people around us all the time, and we have the ability to go right on believing that life should be this way. I need to live to a certain age. I need to be healthy the whole time, rich and hopefully looking young and fit, and that's how life should be. And so to have the opportunity to be with people who can attest so clearly that that's a dream world, and it's not a particularly happy one.
Yeah, they are so capital H happy.
Yes.
Yeah. Just to be.
Yeah. Just to be and living the George Bernard Shaw quote, right?
Yeah.
About the true joy in life being fully used up and not being the selfish, feverish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're living it and being it. And I actually told one of them about that quote. This is like this time last year, and she said, "Yep, that's my life."
Yeah, I don't have time and energy for anything else. So here we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh, it's so vital and so alive. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't have to be living in a war zone to live that way. We just have to realize time is short. Even if you have a long time, it's short. So how do you want it to be? What do you want your life to stand for? What do you want to devote all that love that you are to? Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, my dear.
So beautiful. Oh, thank you. And that's a truly, truly thank practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Even wanting to be in that situation and to be able to see it the way you're seeing it. That is the result of awareness practice, because you have a context for realizing this and not just plunging into despair or depression or self-hatred or, we have much to be grateful for. Yeah.
We do.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Anna.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Anna. So much to be grateful for, Sherry, and time for one more caller.
All right.
Next
Thank
caller.
You.
You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. This is Christina in Southern California.
Hey, Christina.
Hi. So I've been working with, first let me just say, I'm so grateful for this practice and to be here on this call today and listen. Well, as always, for all of that. And I've been practicing with the merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings, and what that released for me in, I do a lot of volunteer work, and also, you know, I don't get paid for all the work I do at my house. As the woman in the family, I do a lot of the heavy lifting, and I often feel resentment around that. And when I first started working with the second assignment this week, I thought, oh, I don't do any good acts. You know, it's like the first thing, you know, the self-hate was right there. And I stepped back, like, right away. I was like, oh, come on. And I thought, but you know what? I feel resentment a lot of times when I do those acts, so I don't get to have the experience. And as I recorded on it, this whole world just opened up to me, and I had to laugh because I thought, here I am as I participate in the practice of offering the merit of all good acts to all beings, you know, freely offering it, I end up receiving, because that weight got lifted off of my shoulder and off of my shoulders, and I just like opened up to all of it and the beauty of it, and being able to carry that into even the work I do for pay. You know, it's just so powerful, and I'm so appreciative for this practice.
So wonderful, Christina, because I think we have to go through such a process in order for the awakening or the liberation to happen, right? Because when we're asked to look at, offer all the kindness that we do to all beings, the merit of all that kindness, the first place that shows up is self-hate. And from a self-hating perspective, you don't do anything kind,
right?
Right. The reason that you pick up the work that you pick up, whether you volunteer or the work that you do, and I happen to know what you do, and the work in the house, is because of the love that you are. And the recognition that the self-hating perspective is only there to stop us from seeing the love. And because it's so difficult to see the love that we are prompted to offer that love, to see how to offer that love to everybody else.
Yes.
When we do that, that we are no longer in this
self-hating perspective, and we can see the loving perspective that is the motive power behind all our actions.
Yes. I mean, is that not the biggest thing ever?
It is the biggest thing. Yes, because that's true, right? I mean, Sherry will always say, can everyone see how good they are? If only everyone could see how good they are. Because we get on these calls and we can see how good everyone else is.
At the monastery, right, at the monastery we had the cap, you know, that had the arrow pointing down to me and it said good person.
Yes.
I loved that cap. I loved seeing that cap. Yeah.
Because otherwise we don't get there, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a beautiful construct that of this karma bead to arrive at the realization of what we are by recruiting love as the action to see the love that we are, which is really just a move to get self-hate out of the way.
Yeah. Oh. And I until you practice it, you can't read that line of the karma bead. At least I couldn't. I couldn't read it in that way. You know, for me, it was like part of my, I was raised Catholic and, you know, it's very much a service religion. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, we just have to do that to be a good, right person, right? You are service. And then, but being able to actually practice it from that perspective was just so, so beautiful. So thank you.
Yes, and if I may, that resentment, that to get to, I'm not allowed to know that I am love and action because I identify with being the resentment that's also there that taints that love and action, which is why I can't claim it, right?
Exactly, and it's so self-centered.
It's so self-centered that I'm doing it for myself. Or you're not doing it wholly, right? If there was a total ability to be of service, then that's all well and good, but you feel resentment, and you yelled at that other place, and you didn't want to do it here, and But you're required to disidentify from that as not who we are in order to be able to be comfortable to claim who we are.
Yeah.
Love and action.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Ashwini. Thank you, Sherry, and everybody.
Thanks, Christina. And Kristen, I can't mute you, so if you can just be quiet while we wrap up the show.
Thank you.
Oh, that's so good. That was so good.
Yeah.
That's just it. I mean, it's self-hate is right there. Well, but you this. Well, but you that. Well, but you that we can't see in that line. Okay, maybe so, but the merit for everything good that I think or say or do, there's any merit in any of it, I'm offering it to all beings. Take that, ego. All right. Well, thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry. Go happy.
Go happy.